You may remember back in the spring, a report came out, a new assessment that came from the Bridgeport School Board, their teaching and learning committee. It showed about a third of kindergarten, elementary, and middle school students are currently reading at their expected grade level. It's only up slightly from last year. And we have seen certainly a lot of learning loss in the state of Connecticut, especially since the pandemic, for both mathematics and reading comprehension. And last week, there were 2 days that looked at reading books and the importance of literacy. And so I wanted to get a check on this literacy and reading comprehension in the state of Connecticut for not just kids, but also adults. So we're talking today. I have for the first time on the show, Melissa Hickey, who is the reading and literacy director for the Connecticut State Department of Education. Melissa, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you here. How are you?
Hi, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me. I am honored to be here today, and I'm doing well. Thank you.
I'm glad to hear that. And again, thank you for your time. I know how busy you must be, especially as we're in the midst of a brand new school year. So thank you for your time. I did want to talk about, first and foremost, why is reading so critical, not just for children, but for people in general? Probably sounds like a very elementary question, but I thought let's start there.
I think this is an amazingly great question, so thank you for asking it. I think what it's best answered by is thinking about the fact that a child who's not reading by the end of first grade has a 1 in 8 chance of ever becoming a skilled, proficient reader. And the impact of students who are not reading is seen at many levels. So we have an increase in absenteeism from school. More kids are being retained, special education rates going up, school dropout rates going up. And as you say about with adults who can't read have difficulty finding jobs, so unemployment rates, and crime. As you know from having talked previously to Commissioner Russell Tucker, she strongly believes in the right to read for all children. And she's made it one of our priority goals to ensure that all of our students are learning to read in the early grades and are reading proficiently and independently by the end of third grade. So once again, it's critical that children are learning to read to go on and function in society. The commissioner talks so eloquently about her passion around the work and has often said that the right to read is a fundamental human right. And ensuring access to literacy and education is essential for building a more just and equitable world. And I just love those words of just and equitable world. So great question, Melissa. Thank you.
Yeah, no. And you actually answered my second, which was what age should kids really know how to read? And you kind of said that they should be proficiently pretty good readers by the end of first grade. Are you finding, Melissa, that I feel like we're seeing studies that are coming out, especially because this generation, like my son is 5. So his generation, the alphas, they're coming out very tech heavy. And they're finding that more screen time actually is making them delayed in their speech, having some delays with their cognitive development. And so is that still the goal? And are we seeing sort of a shift in kids learning to read later on than that first grade milestone?
So five is such a fun age. Thank you for sharing. But, you know, it's so important that we expose kids right at birth. What's interesting is our brains are programmed at birth to speak and to think, but not to read. So reading has to be taught to children and using strategies that are based on the science. So, you know, when you talk about exposing kids to reading, it's so important that this is really done at birth. And it's exactly like you're saying, it's talking to them, developing their speech. So I know it's often easy to give a child a tablet or a phone, but there's definitely conversations that can go around with this tool in hand. You know, what are you reading? What are you looking at? Asking questions. When you're in the car, having them read signs, look at what's around them. And once again, this is so important right at birth. And families can support their literacy development from this young age. And research has actually shown that children who are regularly read to do have a larger vocabulary and perform better on the reading and language test. So it's important to make sure that they are reading that helps to develop their imagination, their creativity. Having access to books and other reading materials, there are a lot of great materials available online through public libraries where for free, you know, you can download online books, get various materials that families can be using to support their children's literacy development. But once again, like doing something simple like asking your child questions, practicing rhyming words, using language in different settings like storytelling, role playing, talking about the family, all these are such important skills that we cannot leave behind and need to continue in addition to whatever else is being utilized online.
So we have Melissa Hickey here, who is the Reading and Literacy Director for the Connecticut State Department of Education. We're talking about the importance of literacy. Melissa, why do you think some kids are not exposed to literacy? They're not exposed to reading at birth. You know, like the idea of you know, driving in the car and pointing out signs, for example, or just reading to them at nighttime. Why are there some children? I would think that seems like a basic, like those are basic things that I feel like most parents are doing. So why are some children illiterate?
So, you know, that's a great question, and it's a multi-layered question, as we know. When you look at, you know, I'm a very scientifically based, research-based person. I really like seeing what the science says and having that form my thoughts and help with my opinions. But when you look globally, there are 781 million illiterate adults globally. And this is affected by many factors. And it includes things that people don't often think about with literacy, but it's housing and food insecurity, lack of a formal education, having interrupted education, so moving around a lot, and experience instruction in classrooms that are not aligned to the science. A lot of people right now are asking about, you know, Melissa, what is this science of reading? And the science of reading is this accumulation of years of research by cognitive and psychological scientists about reading skills, about development, about how to teach and learn, about strategies and best practices. And it's really that we need to be relying on multifacets of the skill, including, like I said before, the speaking, the listening, the reading, the writing, understanding that different letters make different sounds. And when we put them together, that's how we read. Some parents are illiterate, so they're trying their best to support their students, but they're not sure how to do this. You know, some are focused on food. And like I said, housing. So there's a lot of reasons as to why children may be coming unprepared in school or may not be progressing in school. And it's not always that the parents aren't talking or reading to their kids. There are other factors involved.
We have Melissa Hickey here, and she is the Reading and Literacy Director for the Connecticut State Department of Education. We're talking about just reading comprehension, literacy across Connecticut. And we've been talking a lot about the kids. I want to talk about the adults now, Melissa. How important is it that adults are still reading? You know, and I don't even mean just as an example for their children. I mean just in general, like with aging, do you find it's important that adults make time to read?
Absolutely. You know, just like with children, it opens our minds to creativity and imagination and downtime. By reading books and research, we find out so much more about the world around us. You know, it's interesting, when we were on the commercial break, I was thinking about, you know, illiteracy in adults. And there's this one poet, his name is Earl Mills. And he was illiterate. He, you know, you can Google him online. I really do like his poetry. He He was an adult and he couldn't read, but he could fake it, and he could fake it very well. So he had a job, he married, children. His poems talk about sitting in a pew at church, you know, and people surrounding him not knowing the shame of not being able to read. And he was able to go to one of the supports, one of the nonprofits, who taught him as an adult how to read. And before he could do that, he would speak his poetry and his wife would write it down. Mm. But once again, he got to this point where he could fake it. You know, it's the whole fake it till you make it. And he would talk about how there were flyers up on the wall at work and he couldn't read them. But he got skilled at asking the right questions to gain the information. And this is what we see. You know, this is what we see in our students, our children. They get good at these coping skills and figuring out other ways because it becomes shameful. And I know I said this before, but it's really important for everyone to know that reading is not natural. It is something that has to be learned and taught, and adults can do it too. And it has to be kept up. Mm. So basically what you're saying about adults reading is we need to keep our skills sharp. And definitely reading and listening, speaking and writing are all really important skills that continue through adulthood.
Can I confess something to you, Melissa? I feel like I can. You sound like a really
Absolutely.
Kind person.
Absolutely. Okay. That's exciting.
Okay.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Yes. I'm going to do a public confession right now. So when I was a kid, I was growing up in the 90s, and SSR was a big thing. Silent sustained reading.
Mm-hmm.
Huge. I don't know
yes.
if they still do
yes.
that.
Yes.
But I loved it. I loved the free reading in elementary school. I loved that we were given quiet time, like instead of, you know, whatever, instead of nap time, it was like SSR. I loved it. When I got in middle school, though, I
right.
really didn't like it. I know I called it forced reading, which I know is probably not the nicest way to put it. But I felt like there was no collaboration. Like, so I was an avid reader. But then I got into middle school and they had a list of like 10 books you could read. And they weren't the genres I wanted. They, you know, I didn't care about the length. But it's like, these were the 10 books. You had to knock out, you know, 5 of them by the end of the summer. Go.
Right.
And I felt like it became a chore.
Right.
And I got to be honest, it wasn't until I met my husband in college, who's a very avid reader. And that's all he does is read it on his free time. I was like, I hate reading. I really didn't like it. I felt like it was very forced in middle and high school. And so it turned me off. And I feel like unless I ended up with somebody who got me kind of back into reading, I would have been that person that just stunted my reading. I don't even know if I would have done this job very well because I just hated reading. I really, really did. And so I guess my question is, what has anything changed in schools in that regard, like of having a little more free choice? Like, obviously, you need to put some structure in there, right? I mean, sixth graders can't tell you what they want to do. But just being able to give more variety or encouraging kids to read more versus like, you have to read this or you're just a failure. And again, it wasn't
right.
that mean, but it felt that way as a kid. It did feel that way.
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing with me.
You're
it
welcome.
Does break my
better.
Heart as a teacher to know that you at, you know, middle school, you was not happy about that. So I'm sorry for that. You know, reading has always been a passion of mine as well. I loved reading. It did not come easy for me, though. You know, I was taught in the era of we had these open classrooms and kids just kind of explored. And when I really learned more about reading wasn't until I got my master's in education, because I realized when I was teaching second graders that I didn't know how to teach them how to read. So I went back for my master's in special ed. But my love of reading is what guided me to become a teacher. And, you know, we in the schools, we try really hard to make reading fun and exciting and meaningful. And I have to say, I think nowadays there are more books available that appeal to a more varied or a variety of readers. You know, back when we were growing up, there weren't a lot of books out there. But now, you know, you have like your graphic novels, and which it does include a lot of the pictures. It's almost like a comic book. And that really appeals to a lot of students. You know, it still has a lot of really relevant material in it. It's just a different genre. And, you know, science fiction, there's just a lot more out there right now that I think does appeal. And, you know, to think about what you're saying about the forced reading, the Governor's Summer Reading Challenge is something that we have partnered with the governor's office for years. And we more recently started partnering with the state public library. And we brought that up this year because there are some kids who, for the summer, will read an entire Harry Potter book, which is just as relevant as reading 10 other books.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So why penalize the kid who's reading one book when it's just as rigorous as reading these others, if not more? But then you also have, I worked in the Hartford Public Schools, and we had students who do not have books. They may have only had a Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the harm with them reading their Bible over and over, right? They're still reading. So, you know, I agree we need to find the passion of the students and bring that out. Schools work really hard to develop more robust book lists now that really appeal to and represent their wide student body. And, you know, it's voices like yours as students and as adults who have assisted in making this change. So, you know, thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that, Melissa. And again, that was 30 years ago. So I'm sure a lot has changed, but I just wanted to.
Well, in some ways, some things haven't.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fair. I like that. I like the honesty. I appreciate it. And again, Melissa Hickey, you have been just a joy to talk to. I'd love to have you back on the show. Such an important topic. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, once again, I'm honored. Thank you so much for inviting me. And this was truly fun. So
Absolutely.
Thank you again.
Great. I'm glad to hear it. I can't wait to have you back on soon. Melissa Hickey, who is the Reading and Literacy Director for the Connecticut State Department of Ed. Hey, Dan, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning. How you doing?
I am doing just fine. Thank you so much for asking. I have questions about traffic. I know you and I have talked about this before, and I know you're not, like, in charge of traffic. Okay, I want to make that very clear to people. But I guess we could start with, like, the business end of things. I'm sure you heard, because it was all over the news last week, that Howard Safan and Live Nation Connecticut, they would like to open another entertainment venue, literally right between the Amp and the Arena in Bridgeport, and make sort of like a small indoor theater-esque property on the grassy area between those two entertainment venues, and they want to open it in 2025. First of all, let me get your opinion on that. What do you think about it, and do you feel like it's getting a little crowded on that block?
Well, you know, it is a little unfortunate that it seems like all the development that's happening is within this one little area,
right?
Bridgeport. You know, we've got a lot of opportunities, and we've been waiting for a lot of things to happen. You know, I know the Steel Point guys last week also made an announcement with a gas station coming out on the East End with the Dunkin' Donuts, and you know, and everyone's asking the question, when are the apartments coming? When are the apartments coming? So, you know, there's some things that they still need to align there, but you know, obviously residents are anxious to see more development in and around the city. And now with this new concept with the Fillmore, you know, look, these guys know the entertainment business. I don't know much about it in terms of the details. I think right now it's really very much an idea, and there seems to be a little bit of enthusiasm for it because there is a little bit of a need for a niche boutique-y type, you know, few thousand seat facility. You know, the Arena might be too big, right, because they hold 9,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the amphitheater is, you know, virtually a summer venue. So they're either looking to see if there's a need and an opportunity to develop something a little bit more boutique-y and a little smaller for these smaller acts and different kinds of acts, I think, too, than what we're used to seeing between the amphitheater and the Arena. So, yeah, I think there's going to have to be a lot of market research and figure out, okay, hey, is this sustainable? Is this something that we can support here in the region? Clearly, you know, people are looking to come into the city for entertainment. I think, you know, the city's still trying to evolve itself into a destination. This just would be one more opportunity to bring people into the city. So I know that's going to tie back to your question about traffic, because I know that area is horrific, you know, when there's events going on.
It really is. I'm sorry. You know it's coming. But before we talk about the traffic, the other thing that I heard in the Connecticut Post this week, it's not official yet, but it sounds like unofficially the sports betting venue is going to go in the Arena, which we sort of knew unofficially.
Right.
Like, as soon as we knew that Hartford and Bridgeport were going to be the two entities that were allowed to have sports betting venues there, we knew the arena had to be a strong contender. Like that, I think you and I kind of talked about it and we were like, oh, I don't know. But I think we knew it was going to be a strong contender, if not where it was going to go. They haven't officially announced it yet, but it's coming. And so now you've got four big things, literally within a block of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, with traffic being so outrageous already, just between the amp and the arena, and we're not even talking about like James Taylor concerts. We're talking about like Sesame Street Live at the arena is a disaster with the traffic. Like anything going on at those two places, the traffic is horrible. And I know the city's trying so hard to get people to use the trains and to carpool. But realistically, Dan, you and I both know that if you go to any other venue, they're not really pushing for that. Like if you were going to New York City, up to Hartford, into New Haven, Waterbury, the Palace, anything like that, they're not pushing you to do carpooling or take the train because they have they've got it down. They've got the traffic down. They've got the parking down. And for some reason, for such a congested spot that already has traffic problems, we're just going to make it even worse, it seems. So I didn't know if you had any insight into that one.
Yeah, I would say there's a couple of comments. So one is, as it relates to parking, and I think I've said this on the show before, too. People have to get over the fact that, like when you go to New York City, for instance, you're not parking right in front of the facility or right next door. And I think people need to get comfortable with the fact that it's safe to park downtown in Bridgeport and walk the block. Yes, is it aesthetically pleasing walking underneath the 95 underpass? Not necessarily, but it's well lit. There's always police officers on either side of the highway. And I always encourage people, don't think you have to park in the parking garage. I was in there for the Andrea Bocelli concert, which, as you know, was sold out.
Amazing.
And we parked we parked downtown, and it was an easy walk, easy out, right, getting out of there. And, we had zero issues with traffic. So I just want to make people, especially with hockey season coming up with the Islanders, consider parking downtown. It's okay. Trust me.
I agree. I agree. I mean, we've basically, and I don't even know if we're supposed to do that, but we just park. Are we allowed to park at Bob's? Do you know that, if we're allowed to park there? Because that's what we do.
I don't know if it's official, but everybody does.
Right.
I don't think they have signage out there that says you can't.
Okay.
And usually it's after hours over there anyway. So
that's what we just do.
Yeah. And there's plenty of, even street parking, especially on the weekends. The city is pretty empty as it relates to parking. So,
yeah.
And then there's two parking garages on Middle Street, Middle Street and John. So if you want to be in a garage where there's security, you can park there too. And walk the block and a half. So, I want to just make that statement. Secondly, I don't really know a lot, Melissa, to be honest with you, about the sports betting stuff. I'm not a gambler, but, I think the venue is fitting, right? Because people are going there to watch hockey and are there for gaming and to begin with. So I just don't know that market. I think I don't even know if Connecticut really understands it yet, to be honest with you. And I'll tell you why I say that. But are people going to these sports betting facilities like as a date night? I don't think so. I think it's not like it's going to drive a tremendous amount of influx of people. I think they're trying to capture an additional opportunity where people are already there, right? It's a controlled environment, whether they're there for hockey or anything else. But I don't see a tremendous, I don't see people going there like they do the casinos, right? Unless there's some other event.
Thank you to my producer, Eric, because I couldn't think of the name of it. Winners in Milford, which is one of the off-track betting sports book locations. So we have Dan Onofrio here of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. I'm with you, Dan. I'm not a sports gambler or a betting person, none of that. My husband's not either. So I don't know for sure. But what I do know is, this little sports book thing, we pass it all the time. And the traffic on days where there's, major – this past weekend – was crazy over there, and the traffic is insane. And so I'm just thinking, that's a very small, I don't want to call it dinky, but it's tiny. It's a tiny little location, very small parking lot. I mean, I guess because there's so much parking over at the arena, I'm just thinking if you coincide that with an event that's going on there. And that's if there's no other events at the AMP and the smaller venue as well that's going to be going in there in 2025. I'm just thinking this adds to the problem.
Sure, sure. And you said it. Look, we already have a traffic issue there. We were talking about it numerous times on the show. You know, we have to address it, you know, and I think we just have to continue with, you know, partnering up with organizations like Downtown Special Services District and the Chamber of Commerce and work with the city and say, you know, what can we do better? I know both the folks at the arena and at the amphitheater are both willing and able partners to help facilitate. And a lot of this stuff comes down to, you know, the police. It comes down to, you know, how we want to funnel traffic through and in through that area and into downtown. And just be smart about it. And there should be a process that, you know, maybe we, you know, the Pittsburgh Chamber can take a lead on trying to organize the right people around this conversation. But you're absolutely right. There is already a problem there. You know, by adding even more in this one little section, I think, you know, it definitely, if they weren't addressing it already, then, you know, I think it's time that we do so. But I am going to be real curious with this whole sports betting thing to see how they implement it at the arena. Because I think that's a whole big question, too, on what those costs are going to be to set up a shop like that at the arena. And I'll be curious to see what their plans are for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dan, I appreciate you weighing in on this. There's, again, just so much action on that one little block. If we could just spread it out a little bit, but that's another conversation down the road. But thank you. I always appreciate chatting with you.
You got it, Melissa. Have a great day, okay?
Yes, thank you. You too. Dan Onofrio of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council right here on WICC. If you didn't know, September is actually National Preparedness Month, and it raises awareness about the importance of preparing for disasters and emergencies that could happen at any time. So who better to talk to than Scott Appleby with the Emergency Management Office in Bridgeport, especially while Connecticut is in the midst of its hurricane season. Scott, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Melissa, how are you? How are you doing?
You know, I can't complain. We've been dodging some bullets. I'm watching what goes on across the nation during hurricane season, and Connecticut's been okay so far, thank God. So I can't complain. Can't complain so far.
Yeah, we've been fortunate enough. We have been. I don't know if this is the rains, the tears of all the Yankee and Met fans that are out there.
Oh, good Lord. Or the Jets fans. Holy moly. I'm not a Jets fan, but my Lord. I feel so bad for them. Oh, my gosh. I really do. I really, really do. Yeah, yeah. That might be it. Yeah, it's been rough as a sports fan. I don't know.
It's, you know, we bring some levity to it. But, you know, we came on earlier on this. You know, I think a couple months ago we talked about hurricane season, how it runs until November.
Yes.
You know, Hurricane Lee is coming up coming up the coastline. It's going to be, you know, far east away from us. We may get some sort of, you know, maybe some outer bands impacting us, maybe some wind, maybe some rains. But, you know, it just shows that the state of Connecticut is vulnerable to hurricanes. And during hurricane season, we need to be prepared. We need to be alert. And more importantly, we need to ensure that we have our plans in place, that we know where we're going to go, what we're going to do, and, you know, basically where we're going to stay if we have to evacuate. So all those key tips are important, you know, such as, you know, a family emergency kits. And all that stuff can be found, obviously, on our city's website, on ready.gov. But, I mean, I think it just shows that Connecticut is vulnerable to hurricanes. We can get impacted by a severe hurricane. This one's a big one. This one was a big one right from the get-go. And, you know, a little jog to the left, you know, and then it's impacting Connecticut fully. So we're keeping an eye on it. We're hoping it stays out. But, you know, we'll see. And, you know, we're not over yet. Hurricane season is still here until November 30th. And hopefully, you know, we start to minimize and they stay, you know, out in the water and they don't make landfall.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Scott, you were saying a family emergency kit. What is in an emergency kit?
So here's the thing. I mean, you know, when you're evacuating a home, or if you're, you know, you lose power for, you know, we're talking days and maybe a week, maybe even longer than that, you need to be prepared. So what's some of the essentials you need, right? So I definitely need water. I definitely need non-perishable items where, God forbid, if I can't heat, I'm able to at least, you know, get some food substance in me. You definitely need a battery operator radio, batteries for your flashlight. You know, we don't, people love to put candles out. We don't encourage that because, God forbid, if a candle, you know, falls off, gets, you know, catches onto our curtain, all that good stuff, we try to eliminate and minimize any fire hazards. You know, you have anything that, you know, your medications, you have backup medications that you need to have in your kit. Those items that you need on a daily basis should be in that family kit. And when you talk about 1 gallon of water per day per person is pretty much what you should be preparing for. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, my God, that means I have to go out to Costco or, you know, BJ's and, you know, take every single case of water off the shelf. You don't need to do that. In an emergency, most municipalities like Bridgeport would activate emergency shelters and locations that you could come charge phones. You could come, you know, fill back up your bottled water. You could take showers. You know, if your home is in a flood zone, you know, we would have cots, we would have blankets for you to stay. So most municipalities within the state of Connecticut are very much prepared for a hurricane or any major incident for that matter. But you still need, you do play a part in this, and you do need to at least take what you need, or at least prepare what you need in a backpack. Could be a tote, one of those plastic totes. Depends on what you have is going to depend on how big your family emergency kit is.
Yeah, certainly. That's a really good point. And again, Scott Appleby is here, who is at the Office of Emergency Management in the city of Bridgeport. And we're in the height of hurricane season. It's probably important, Scott, that you have this ready. Even though we're projecting that we're in the clear so far, we still have, you know, a good 2 months, a little more than 2 months left. And really anything could change, because we even saw with in Vermont, for example, earlier this summer in July when they got rocked, we didn't technically really see a lot of that. But we got the trickle-down effect. Like, our farms were destroyed in northern Correct. Connecticut because of that. So even if it doesn't show in our forecast that we're going to get hit, I would think you'd want to have these things prepared, because you just don't know if something will change overnight, or if there's going to be, again, like a trickle-down effect from something else. I would think you'd want this ready always.
Oh, always. I mean, it's listen, a lot of the items that you have in your kit can last for a couple years, you know, and you plan that accordingly. You put it off to the side, you know exactly where you need to grab it in the event you need to evacuate. And even if you don't need to evacuate, you know, what are some of the other items that you may need to keep your home going? A lot of folks say to us, well, I live in a flood zone and I wouldn't know where to go. We're asking, well, do you have family members? Well, yeah, sure. Do your family members live here or they live out of state? Well, they live out of state. Well, is that state going to be impacted by the hurricane? Well, no. Well, maybe you could ask if you could go visit them for a little bit. Or, you know, you go to a hotel, go to a, you know, another shelter. There's a lot of, we just need people just to stay calm and really prepare, because when you're prepared, I think I said this one other show, you're less fearful. And when you're prepared, if you think about it, right, you have all this stuff, I'm ready to go. If I need something, maybe I'll go out and buy it. But in the most part, you're not fearful of what's coming, because you know you went through every single, you know, what if with you and your family, and you know, you feel good about it. And that's mm-hmm. what we need you to do now. You know, the bright sunny days is when you need to do it, and yeah. not during the hurricane.
Yeah, that's a good point. Scott Appleby is here with the city of Bridgeport, Office of Emergency Management, and we talked last week with Bridgeport Police about some openings for the city. And I wanted to talk to Scott because I see there is a major opening in your office as well. Scott, wanted to get the details out there. What is this about?
Yeah, so we have openings for our public safety telecommunicator position, which is our 911 operators within one of the premier centers in the state. I mean, we've come a long way with our department. It's up there within one of the best within the state. The men and women who work there now are the ones that answer your calls, you know, from an emergency perspective. They get the first responders rolling. They get them out to the, you know, wherever they're needed. So they're kind of, you know, what we say is they're their first line of defense. But we have open positions that are going to be the exam. The open competitive application for the exam will be closing on September 24th. We're looking for some really good candidates. It's a great career. You know, you start off around $24 an hour, and then after the first year, you got, you know, other opportunities to move up in the career path. We offer a lot of training. We offer a lot of opportunities within our department. And, you know, we're one of the busiest departments. You're talking about 2,300 911 calls a week that we get at our center. So it's busy. It's active. And we're here to help, and we want you to be part of that team. You know, we preach that a lot, and we're hoping that we get some really good candidates. And, you know, we're going to keep this open, and again, hopefully we'll fill our positions, and if not, we'll have another exam. But this is your opportunity now to apply for us. Basically, what you need to do is you need to type about 35 to 40 words per minute. That's the first part. Second part is you go through a multitask type process to see whether or not you're really good at multitasking, and then you go through an oral interview. So it's not a bad process, a pretty quick process. And again, hoping that there's some women and some men within the city of Bridgeport and surrounding communities that are interested in becoming a telecommunicator. I think it's a rewarding job. And the you know, the women and men that we have in the center right now are top notch. They're truly heroes in the own sense. And, you know, again, we hope you could join our team.
So those are that's a very interesting, you know, like those are some interesting tasks that you ask for, because I was wondering, like with taking those kinds of calls, you don't have to have a background in law enforcement.
No, you do not.
That's great.
You don't have to have a background in law enforcement, fire, or EMS.
Wow.
We train you. We train you right from the get-go. So, you know, we want to kind of get you trained up to what our standards are, and you know, in what our procedures and policies are. There is state standards that we have to adhere to. There's national standards we adhere to, and then everything else is pretty much what we do and how we operate within the city of Bridgeport.
Now, I have to confess to you, Scott, I'm on the city of Bridgeport website where they have the careers listed, bridgeportct.gov, for anyone who's looking for it. Where is yours?
Open competitive examination.
Ah, that's why I couldn't find you. There you are. Okay, because when I was on there, I'm like, I'm looking at job opportunities. I'm like, this isn't seasonal. And then I'm looking, okay, open competitive exam. Yeah. Okay, so there it is right there under Emergency Operations Center, Public Safety Telecommunicator. It's right there. So if you're looking for the website, you are interested in the job that Scott just mentioned, again, they will include the training as well. Go to bridgeportct.gov and look under the City Careers tab right there on the website. Scott, thank you so much for this information. Good luck in your search, and I look forward to hearing from you very soon.
Melissa, you and your family, you stay safe, and everybody on the radio, you guys stay safe as well.
Aw, thank you, Scott. You too. Love to you and your family, and I know we'll be talking again very soon. Scott Appleby right here on WICC.